work with churches and ministries, helping them to get organized, get in compliance, and get control of their ministry's finances. I started off in this area of serving churches. Initially, Pastor Winston called me. He knew that I was at least a CPA. I think back then I was I was actually doing the overheads. You know how you do the overhead slides with the we had the thing where you put it inside of that machine and the slides. We wasn't high tech like this high tech. You got somebody in the background doing the but no, I was doing that, and I was what they call the dancing CPA. You know, dancing with the music. So he knew that I was a CPA. He called me and asked me, you know, to come in, check out the church and church finance area and, you know, kind of shed some light on what's going on. And I did, and that opportunity gave me some insight on what churches are all about, and it also, he basically asked me to come in and just do the whole thing, set up the books, get everything recognized. And so I had been serving as a controller for Living Word Christian Center from that point on for about, I want to say about 5 years. And then I want to say at the end of 99, God called me out of that to help other churches to do the same thing. So that's what I do with my company, Whitfield & Associates, is help churches in this area. So we're going to cover quite a bit of information today. And as we go through the information, if you have any questions, feel free to just raise your hand and ask the questions along the way, because this information that I share with you can kind of get a little deep into, you know, complicated things, you know, taxes and stuff like that. And I'd rather address your questions as we go along. So let's get started. I'm going to pretty much assume that you're either, you know, new church, just getting started, looking at getting set up, or either, you know, somewhat experienced, but you're not the Living Word Christian Center size with, you know, 16,000 members. Okay. You may have 10 members in your church, maybe 5, maybe you're just, you know, just thinking about starting a church. So what do you need to do? One, when you're starting a ministry, choose your board members. You'll want to get incorporated with the Secretary of State, get your tax ID number. You'll obtain that with the IRS. And with those two things, being incorporated and getting your tax ID number, you can then open your ministry bank account. And it's also important that you register with your state attorney general's office. The attorney general is responsible for overseeing charitable organizations, so that if an individual has a complaint or a concern, when I say individual, I mean a person from the general public comes to your church or whatever, and they have a concern, they can go to the state attorney general's office and file a complaint. And so when they file that complaint, the Attorney General's office wants to have some information about your organization on file. Plus, it's important, as far as the Attorney General is concerned, before you start soliciting donations, you're supposed to be registered with the State Attorney General's office. Okay? Next, you'll want to look at applying for your 501c3. Oh. Bounce back. Okay. Apply for your 501c3. That's a complex process. The IRS's fee for reviewing your application is $850. Long time ago, it used to be $500. Then they took it up to $750, and now it's $850. In fact, they took it up to $850 not this past January, but January before. You'll also need to register with the Department of Revenue or Department of Taxation. That's the agency that handles payroll tax, state payroll taxes if you have employees. Or if you're selling anything, you need to register with the State Attorney General's office. Some people make the general assumption that churches don't have to deal anything with taxes because they're tax exempt. Okay? That's not the case. Tax exempt basically means that you're not required to pay income taxes on your profits. Your income is exempt from taxes. But like any other business, if you have employees, you have to take taxes out of their paychecks and transfer that money or send that money to the IRS and state. If you sell merchandise to individuals, you're supposed to charge sales taxes. Now, if you're in different states, you want to check with your state Department of Revenue and find out what their guidelines are for selling merchandise and collecting taxes. Sometimes they have exceptions for miscellaneous types of transactions and make those exempt. But for the most part, you're selling books, tapes, CDs, and things like that. State wants a piece of that. And individuals, you know, when they're conducting business with the church, you know, a lot of times, you know, the church has a general thing where, okay, if you want to buy a CD or a tape, it's $5. And they have no idea that they're paying sales tax. You know, they just think, oh, the church is not charging me any tax. Well, yeah, a lot of churches probably aren't charging any tax because they don't know. But technically, when you're doing it the right way, we like to keep things simple when we're dealing with our congregation. We don't want to deal with a bunch of change and nickels and dimes and, you know. Can you imagine having, you know, somebody order, you know, 3 or 4 tapes. Now somebody's got to calculate that and figure out what the tax is. And who wants to deal with that? So, yeah, we keep things simple. $5, $10, $3, whatever. Deal with whole dollars. But on the accounting side, on the back end side, when it's all said and done, somebody's got to do a special calculation and say, yeah, you know, for $5, if we really think about it, we get to keep $4.75, and out of that, 25 cents is, you know, for the state. Do a special calculation to kind of back into figuring out what's the state's portion versus what our portion is. Okay? So, yes.
Are you saying that tax exemption is not automatic in churches, but we do have to file for it?
No. Let me correct that. That's not necessarily what I said. A church is automatically tax exempt. Okay, as a church, you are tax exempt. And even for filing for a 501c3, churches are exempt. You don't have to do that. But you will, if you want to get that 501c3 letter that says you are exempt, you do have to go through the application process.
Thank you.
Okay. But in what I was saying as far as churches being exempt, not exempt, is that you're not exempt from dealing with taxes overall. You do have to address taxes within your organization. Yes.
I had spoken with an IRS representative.
One question here, just a minute.
I had spoken with an IRS representative about a year ago, mm-hmm. and they were looking to put in place an online, you talked mm-hmm. about the 501c3,
yeah.
and it was only going to be $250.
$200.
Have they instituted
no,
that?
No, they haven't. In fact, I want to say maybe about June or July of 2010, they sent an announcement saying, you know, it doesn't look like we're going to be able to do this. And they didn't indicate that, you know, it's going to be deferred or give us any kind of time frame as to when that's going to happen. Yeah, they did put out that announcement. We thought the fees were going to be nice and low, $200 if you applied online. So yeah, maybe one day they will come up with it once they work it out. But they had plans on launching it sometime during 2010. Okay. Let's see, applies for sales tax exemption. If your state offers an exemption for sales taxes, you'll want to apply for that. I know a lot of people get confused when we talk about the tax exemption. At least when I ask them for a copy of their tax exempt letter, usually like the 501c3 letter, they'll give me the Illinois sales tax exemption letter. That's a completely different thing. Your state sales tax exemption allows you to go to the store and make a purchase and not pay sales taxes on that purchase, okay? Now, you cannot go to the store with your 501c3 letter and not pay sales taxes. So you do have to go through a process with your state to apply for that sales tax exemption. So you'll want to check your state's website and find out what that process is all about. In Illinois, it's interesting. They don't have a form. They give you specific guidelines, and you have to send them a letter along with all sorts of attachments. Yes?
I got a letter I sent in for the sales tax, and I got a letter back telling me they needed what they needed. And one of those things was audited financial statements. And, you know, by being young, you haven't gotten that yet. Mm-hmm. And then they said, we don't want to know about the programs you have planned.
Right.
We want you what you have done. And at that time, it was just a few.
Mm-hmm.
And so then later, while I was waiting for that, I had another letter saying that your organization doesn't fall under that.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't really... I didn't want to accept that answer,
mm-hmm.
So I said I was going to apply again because where they stated it, it was seemed like that's what I'm doing is outreach with clothing in bulk mm-hmm. and all of that.
Yeah.
So do you think it's worth me going back again, or once they
Absolutely.
Make their decision, is it just final?
No, I would consider applying again. Give it another year. See how you can, you know, work out mm-hmm. your description. But yeah, in the
okay,
state of
you.
Illinois, she happens to be an Illinois client. Did I do your 501c3? Yes, I think.
Yes, you did.
Yeah,
and I want
the state
to, and I'm not trying to do a plug, but don't go through any toil. If you really want to get your 501c3 set up and you want to set up right and expeditiously, Belinda, I'm telling you, you guys
Thank
need
you.
To go through her, not just with that, the support behind it. I mean, I'm just not trying to plug her,
okay.
but.
Okay, Ms. Evans, we're going to move forward and get back to the class. Okay. But no, she said one of the things is when I did her 501c3, and as far as the state sales tax exemption, I did give her the sales tax paperwork and told her Illinois does not grant a sales tax exemption to all 501c3s. Just because you're a 501c3 does not mean you're going to get a state sales tax exemption. There are specific guidelines or specific types of organizations that the state will give that exemption to. Okay, so, you know, and just like she said, for Illinois, they want to know not just what you're planning to do, but what you're actually doing. So still with your state, go to their website, get the guidelines and get the details for that. Yes, one question here.
Thank you. Question. In order to apply for the sales tax exemption,
mm-hmm.
must you have a 501c3?
It depends. Check your state. Each state is different.
Illinois,
no, because a church doesn't have to get its 501c3, but yet they can apply for that sales tax exemption. Yes. Mm-hmm. Annual reporting requirements. Each regulatory agency that I mentioned, Secretary of State to get you incorporated, Attorney General's office, you know, to register for charitable organization, as well as the IRS for 501c3 applications, they all want you to do some annual reporting. So the Secretary of State, typically all they want is an updated list of who your board members are. Okay? Usually that fee is very low, maybe under $10. I think in Illinois it's $10. It's important for you to keep that information up to date. If you do not send them that information, they will dissolve your corporation involuntarily. Okay? So you will no longer exist, and then you'd have to go through a process to get reinstated. The Internal Revenue Service, for most nonprofits, will want you to file what's called a 990 form or some type of 990 form. And it depends on how much money you bring in. Revenue, not profits. So if your total revenues are under $25,000, you can do the 990N, which is an online filing, and that's where you go online and you just give them the updated name of the main person that's in control and your address, and you know, you're there, you're done. The 990EZ applies if your total revenues are, oh my gosh, they change it every year. At first it was 100,000, then they went up to 1,000,000, then they brought it down to 500,000 and 350. So I think it might be down to 250 or back down to $100,000 now. The reason they went all over the place with that is because a few years ago, they totally revamped the long form 990. I mean, they took a 12-page tax return and expanded it to include all these additional schedules from Schedule A through Schedule O. or P or Q or R, okay? So an additional 20-some odd schedules on top of that. So what they did is they increased the income amount so that smaller organizations could file the easy form and not have to go through that complex process. But then they gradually started decreasing that revenue mark so that more and more organizations started adapting and filing this long form. So eventually they're going to get back to $100,000. If your revenues are over $100,000, you ought to file the long form 990. My suggestion is when you need to file a 990EZ or a 990, don't do it on your own. That's a tax return. You want to get a professional to do that for you. I've known a couple of people who attempted to do it on their own and it was wrong, and they amended it on their, called themselves amending it on their own, and messed that up too. And then they had to file a second amendment, which they want me to do the second amendment, but they don't even have their numbers together for me to do that right. I'm like, I'm not doing anything unless you got some good numbers for me. State Attorney General's office, they want you to file an annual report. Now, usually churches are exempt, but some state attorney general's offices require the churches to file a certain form to claim that exemption. So you don't have to do those annual reports. Like Illinois, churches have to file a certain form to be exempt from doing the annual reports. The most important thing you can do is keep your address current with each of these agencies. Because when you register the first time, they've got a certain address. And if there's any notices they need to send you, they're going to send it to that same old address. If you've moved, you're not going to find out. You're not going to know what information that you need to know. One important thing that happened not long ago is nonprofits, if your income was under $25,000, you did not have to file anything. Then they changed it and made it where you got to at least do this 990N. They put out some guidelines that said, if your organization does not file a report for 3 years in a row, we're going to cancel your 501c3 altogether. Okay? So last year was the last year that they had to, you know, other organizations, not churches, but other organizations had to go through and file their at least a 990N in order to avoid losing their 501c3. Okay, and they published, they put out notices and everything. They did the best they could. I think the effort that the IRS put forth was really good. I mean, they even did YouTube videos and stuff like that to get the word out. Yes?
I got a quick question. When we first started off, we were doing more business in the state of Georgia. Mm-hmm. And so that's when we first filed, our CPA filed for us and everything. We filed on the state of Georgia, so mm-hmm. we still listed under Georgia. And then, of course, we relocated to North Carolina doing business. Our CPA had us file doing business, attorney to file doing business in North Carolina so we could do business.
Okay.
But he told us for now he felt like we should just kind of leave it. But really, we do operate out of the base of North Carolina. So do you think it's any value in just transferring everything to the state of North Carolina? Or should we
getting
just
like reincorporated in that other state?
Yeah,
because right now what she's describing is what's called a foreign corporation. That's like if you're incorporated in one state and you go to another state, mm-hmm. you are considered a foreigner. Mm-hmm. Your corporation is considered a foreign corporation in that state, and so you have to register as a foreign corporation. Mm-hmm. Now I would consider. Now, do you have your 501c3?
Yes, we do. Uh-huh.
You do.
And we
okay.
have a CPA that yeah. you know, sent us to the attorney.
Sure, you know.
And all that.
Yeah.
We paid an attorney to
right.
get us to do business in mm-hmm. North Carolina, but we you really could, operate out of North Carolina, but we still do the Georgia.
Yeah, you're not doing anything.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's a tough decision to make because you've mm-hmm. you've done a lot, you know, to yeah. get to this point, to get mm-hmm. incorporated and get your 501c3. Mm-hmm. So. You know, you could do it one way or the other. It really doesn't matter. It's just that every year you've got to do annual reports in both states just to mm-hmm. keep current. And you have to pay, you know, fees for both of that, you know. The other thing is if you choose to dissolve the first corporation.
So you would have to dissolve it.
Oh, yeah, you have to dissolve the first corporation.
One kind of probably recommend it, just mm-hmm. leave it as it is.
Yeah,
okay.
You have to dissolve the first corporation uh-huh. and... so there's paperwork that you need to do with that. And so you're starting from scratch. You lose the history. Okay. I mean, as far, you know, like your credit history, or just to say you've been in business for X number of years, you kind of lose that when you dissolve your corporation.
Okay.
We got a lot to cover, you guys, and this was like just supposed to be just like fast slides to get through. But I had one more question. We're going to go ahead, move forward.
Multiple places within the same state. So when we're updating the address, we just give the address for the main location, mm-hmm. and the other sites, if they're in different cities within the same state, that's okay.
That's okay.
Thank you.
That's correct. The main thing is, you know, within the different villages or communities that you're in, you want to just check to see if there are any special registration, business registration requirements that you have at that level. Tools for success. Okay, now we're getting to the money kind of stuff. All right, key things that you're going to need is a file management system. You got a lot of paperwork you're going to be dealing with, so you've got to have a system in place to organize that. And we're going to talk about that. An accounting program, a membership database program you're going to need, and some policies and procedures. You're also going to need, and we'll get into these, some internal controls. You'll want to stay in compliance with IRS's guidelines, and also you'll need some training. So let's get into that into a little bit more detail now. File management system. This is kind of how I suggest that you structure your files. One, have a place where you keep your corporate records, contracts, another filing system for deposits, a filing system for all the bills you pay, and then another filing system for your bank statements. And when I say that, I mean it may be a drawer, it may be a file cabinet, whatever. You're going to have a system to keep track of these. Corporate records are things like your articles of incorporation, your 501c3 approval letter, your bylaws, your meeting minutes from your board meetings. Hopefully, you guys are having board meetings and somebody's keeping minutes and keeping up with all of this stuff. So these are your corporate type of records. Contracts. If, you know, you guys enter into, I mean, your church enters into any different kind of contracts, you want to keep up with all of that. I'll tell you, when I am auditing, going through and doing audits, and one of the things is to, you know, give me copies of all contracts of whatever. These are some of the things that are the hardest things to find. Why? Because the person who entered into the contracts usually keep the contracts, stick it in some duffel bag or who knows where. It's at home. Let's say the church, you know, buys a vehicle. Pastor buys a vehicle. He's driving the vehicle. He done took the papers and stuck them somewhere at home. Okay. Or, I mean, who knows what people do, but they don't, for some reason, they don't turn the paperwork in to the person that's managing the finances. So you have to, you know, set the system up and, you know, observe what kind of contracts and things, major purchases that you've had, that you may have warranties or other documents that need to be stored in this contract file. Deposits. Well, how are you going to file deposits? Deposits is just money. That's money going to the bank. You need a system. When your accounting team is counting the money, there should be some record of what they counted. How much is coins, cash, tithes, offerings, whatever. There should be a system where they're recording what came in, and that paperwork should be stored in your files. Okay? Your paid bills. When you pay your vendors, you should have a system for keeping track of that. I'll give you some examples of the documentation for paid bills. You should have an invoice or some kind of receipt along with the copy of the check or the check stub. I mean, when I say copy of the check, I mean like a carbon copy of the check. Or if you are really currently operating at a level where you're printing checks on laser paper, then you will, you know, tear off the stub because usually there are three parts. So something that shows who got paid, how much, what date, and the supporting documentation. Bank statements, even credit card statements, those kinds of things, you want to set up a filing system for those. an accounting program. We need to take things up a notch. And, you know, we're not doing things by paper anymore, handwriting and, you know, you managing the church finances through those checkbooks. Have you got, do you remember those? And I know they still have these, those little check registers. When you're writing checks, you know how you used to keep track. Do people still use those? You do? I don't know. Maybe I'm I kind of taking things up a notch. It's all computerized for me now. But computer program, you know. You've got to start doing things, take advantage of technology these days, and use an accounting program. I generally recommend Peachtree, Complete Accounting, or either QuickBooks Pro. And then there's also QuickBooks Online. That's a good application that you can use as well. It's going to keep track of the church finances as well as it does payroll. It allows you to use it to reconcile your bank accounts and so much more. Had a question here? Yes.
I know your recommendations are for those programs. How do you feel about Power Church?
Power Church, we're going to get into that next. Membership database programs, we need that. Okay? I don't care. Pick any kind of membership database you want. Do your research. These membership database programs are going to keep track of your members' contact information, their contributions, generate contribution statements. It's important for you to have that database. They are well designed to help you to manage the churchy side of the books, okay? But they are not accounting programs. Now, I will tell you, just about all of these membership database programs are going to have an accounting module. Because they're going to try to be everything that you need, okay? I've checked them out, a number of them. Usually, they do an awesome job with the membership database side. But the accounting side is weak. Sure, you can record your checks. Sure, you record your deposits. You may get some little QC statements. But they're not what you need. They're not a full, richly featured accounting program. They just don't have the muscle, okay? I had one client using Shelby. In fact, at Living Word, we were using Shelby when I first came in, and I had to make a decision, okay, what am I going to use to manage the church's finances? Shelby does have an accounting feature. In fact, Shelby is probably one of the most expensive church management programs on the market. They were 10 years ago, 11 years ago, and they still are, okay? But back then, I checked out Shelby. They did a little demo with me. Boy, when I was recording invoices or whatever, it was just so many steps. Now, I was already used to Peachtree, okay? I knew I could get in and out. But when I saw all the little loops I had to go through to check, I'm like, oh, no, this is counterproductive. I'm not doing that. And then the other thing I had to realize is that I knew that was a church management system. I knew Pastor Winston wasn't just all about church. I knew he had a vision to go all over the place, do all sorts of things. So I said, wait a minute, I need a program that can do all this stuff, that he, you know, do all the accounting for all this stuff he wants to do. So I wasn't going to be working with two different accounting programs. One for this and one. Now, the main reason why a lot of people like to have one complete program. And I know these programs are designed to where when you record the contribution, it's going to batch it up and feed the information right into the accounting side. For me, that might have saved me 2 minutes, maybe 10 minutes, something like that. What I was losing, you know, it just wasn't worth it. So my recommendation has always been have two databases. When you're setting up your controls, and we're going to get to that later, you need separation and checks and balances within your system.
I was just going to ask you, what are some other ones you recommend besides Shelby?
Oh, I don't recommend Shelby. That costs too much money for you guys. No. You find an inexpensive program. I generally recommend Membership Plus. I like, you don't like Membership? Well, see, I don't use it every day. See, that's the thing. I don't use it every day. I use the accounting program. So, you know, Membership Plus, that's a very inexpensive program. I don't know. I mean, Membership Plus was the main one that I was offering. But you just do a search on Google. You know, Power Church. Membership Plus is cheap because that's like under $300, or you know, it's real cheap. When you start getting into Power Church and logos, you're starting to spend you know, a couple of thousand, maybe about $1,000 or a little bit over $1,000. And so, I'm talking about the churches that's got 10 members, you know, and not a lot of money to invest. When you're ready to spend some more money and you know you're going to be able to take advantage of those features that they have, great, go ahead and spend that money. Okay? Yes.
Do you recommend separate computers for the finance software and the membership?
If you have people like that and you're working together at the same time, great. But if you're not there financially, keep it all on one computer. You can have passwords to log in and out of different areas so that, you know, your accounting is password protected, and same thing for your membership database. Okay? Policies and procedures. Let's see how far I'm going to get into this one. Policies and procedures. One, you need finance department should have their own policies and procedures. How do you run handling the money in the finances? What by that I mean, you know, how are you going to, you know, record your deposits, pay your bills, as far as requiring requiring individuals to fill out a form in order to get some money, you know, getting authorizations for everything. You should have some guidelines for that. Accounting team should have their own policies and procedures. What's your process for counting money? Okay. Are you going to have procedures that require, you know, you to rotate your team, you know, not have the same two people counting all the time? Your membership database management should have their own policies and procedures on how they're going to maintain that database. Okay. And this is just basically making sure everybody's, you know, are playing by the same rules, doing the same thing. And so when you've got changes in people, you know, coming in and out, and what I mean by that is, you know, one person decides to leave that particular department and a new person steps in, they've got some guidelines to follow. Staff and volunteers, they need to know. They're involved in handling money, and you need to have some guidelines for that. So they need to have guidelines for, you know, how to request money, how to return receipts, and things like that. Let's talk about internal controls and segregation of duties. These are the ushers, okay? They're the ones that's collecting the money from the count, okay, from the congregation. You want to have two people with the money at all times. Very, very important. Next point. No tampering with the envelopes. Have any of you ever counted, been part of a counting team? Mm-hmm. You've been part of a counting team, you know, every now and then you come, well, it may not be every now and then, it may be every single Sunday you see some envelopes coming in and they're empty. Yep. And somebody done wrote that there was a $10 offering, but it's an empty envelope. They got their name and everything, but where's the money? Okay? And you know, your ushers go through those envelopes to make change. Somebody's got a $50 bill. What are they going to do? Oh, dig through an envelope, take her money out, take this 20 out, here's your change, woo, and drop the rest of them, bam. Does that happen in your church? If it does, say amen. Yes, it does. No, what'd you say, not anymore? Oh, it never happened? It never happened?
We're not big enough.
Oh. Is that because you went to my class last year and you stopped? This happens for real, okay? Not in your church? That's good. Okay, so what you want to do is give the ushers petty cash to make some change. Okay, well, maybe it's my turn. I don't know. No, I can't say that. But no, this really does happen, okay, where they need to make change and they're like, well, what are we going to do? And they do go in and do that. Okay, so you want to give them their change to their, you know, singles and tens or fives or whatever, so they can always make change and not have to tamper with the envelopes. Next, is the accounting team. These are the ones in the back counting the money. They prepare the deposits, they secure the deposits, and provide some type of report. So that's that group. So main thing, you don't want to have the same group of people handling the money from the time you collect it going all the way to the bank.
Question on that. Should the accounting team be bonded?
Yeah, you can get them bonded through your insurance company. Mm-hmm. Bank deposit. You want to have two people with the money at all times. Secure the money in one of those secure bags. You can get one of those secure bags from your bank, a locking bag. Yeah. One of the most important things, you can be careful. Now, a lot of times it's the pastor that's actually taking the money to the bank. Okay? And, you know, the key thing is, you know, if that's a secure bag, you don't want the pastor to have the key to the bag. But to some degree, pastor got access to everything. Okay, so what's the point of locking the money in a secure bag and the key is in his drawer? Okay, so, you know, always think there's got to be two people to get access to that money. Sometimes, you know, the money is in, you might even have a little safe. And where's the safe usually? In the pastor's office. And who's got the key to the combination of the pastor's got the key or the, you know, he's got the combination. Okay? But you want to make it to where it takes two people to get access to it. So if it's a combination, it's a safe in his office, he shouldn't have the combination or he shouldn't have the key. Okay? Because he could just go in and, you know, get what he needs and, you know, have good intentions of putting it back. But then when the money doesn't match up, now you got some issues to deal with. Then you got the data entry person. This is the person that's posting the offerings to the membership database. And when they're done reporting, you know, recording all that, they should be printing out a report by fund that tells you how much was collected for each fund. I think we need to get her a new computer.
Amen.
She needs one too. Okay, this is the bookkeeper. This person is going to post the deposits to the accounting system, and usually she's going to make sure that that money ties out to the bank deposit ticket that you receive. Oh, we got so much to do in 5 minutes. They're supposed to compare the deposit slip to what the data entry person does. Keep church finances and personal finances separate, okay? Shouldn't be combining personal money with church money. Adopt an accountable plan, and that basically means that receipts are required if you need to get a reimbursement. You must be returning receipts within a reasonable period of time when you get money in advance. We call that giving people advances. They got to turn in those receipts at a reasonable period of time. Also, they should be returning them receipts. Like if they're spending money, it should be part of your policy that they should turn in their receipts to get their money back within a reasonable period of time. How many times, I mean, come on, situations do come up where people save their receipts for a big check. And then now you caught off guard and you got to cut this check. You know, plus you should have some guidelines with regard to whether, you know, when they spend money and it wasn't even authorized for them to spend money and they're coming to you asking for a reimbursement. That's part of your staff and volunteer procedures. Yes. Question regarding people that spend money.
That spend money without getting authorization. Because, like, we have something in place that you need to ask someone mm-hmm. or, you know what I'm saying, or make mm-hmm. a phone call. Mm-hmm. And yeah. I'm sad to say this, but the pastor be at the bookstore and be like, oh, I'm going to buy this. And I'm just like, you need
well,
to let me
know. Well, the pastor's
know.
A different thing.
But
now,
how
you
does
gotta
that?
Let him do it, however he want to do
yeah,
it.
Yeah, but that's, but sometimes it's like, a big purchase, and I understand you told somebody else that that was okay, but then
but
I
what
get
you
a
gonna
big
do?
Seat.
What you gonna do?
I don't know.
What you gonna do?
I'm
you
just
can't
saying,
do.
Well, not just
yeah,
pastor,
sure he should, but I know. Yeah, I know what you mean.
But you get caught off guard.
If it's not the pastor, if it's not the pastor, let's say it's not the pastor. because the pastors are making, they're at a point, you all have to understand, when they're at the bookstore, they are making an executive decision, okay? It's an executive decision.
Somebody else then.
Okay, they have no right to make those kind of decisions because they're spending the church's money. And then you got to teach them their lesson sometime. We're not reimbursing it this time.
Okay.
I'm sorry. Did you follow the guidelines?
Not like forcing the pastor to reimburse, but just like if someone, you know.
That's what she's saying.
Right. If you're spending money and you're trying to get your money back and nobody told you you could do it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's where you have to lay down. And sometimes you have to remind them occasionally. Just a reminder, send out a memo. You know, have a community. You probably wonder, how am I going to send out a memo? Have a communication. Hopefully you got a system to communicate to your volunteers. Okay. Where you send out a memo, let everybody know. What the deal is. Now, wait, my 5 minutes, is that because I got 15 minutes of Q&A? Or I'm running into Claire's time? Oh, my. See, Claire, I warned you. Okay. Go ahead.
I'm sorry. Do you have those forms? Like an example of forms?
Yes,
of,
okay. I do. I should mention to you all, and at the end of my last slide, you see my website, my name, phone number, and website. It's on there. I do have what's called a Church Finances 101 e-learning course. It's a video course with handouts, and internal controls is one of the courses, and there's tons of forms. And the policies and procedures that I'm talking about, they're there for you to just download. You just have to pay for the course. Okay. $35 is the course, so it's pretty cheap. So go to my website, churchcpa.com. Yes, it's on the last slide. The last slide. Okay, document all transactions with receipts. Pay by check or church credit card and get receipts for all credit card transactions. Now, I just want you all to know, if your pastors visited, I warned them in the last pastor session, if they sat in, that they know they need to start turning in receipts. Okay, they now know. Y'all know. They know I did that for you. Okay. I got your back. Y'all should know I did a lot. Hey, I covered a lot of territory for you all in that session. Okay. Use a church credit card for church purposes only. No ATM. See, I told them about that too. Don't go to the ATM machine. Okay. So, hey, make sure they was in that session or tell them to get the tape. All right. Record credit card transactions in detail. Reconcile your bank accounts. Now, this is on you. Reconcile your bank accounts. Usually in your QuickBooks or Peachtree, there's a process for you to reconcile your bank accounts, reconcile your credit cards. And on this reconciliation part, have any of y'all did the reconciliations in the computer before? Okay, well, when you reconcile, I just let you know. When you reconcile, it's one thing to balance out. In QuickBooks, this is one thing I do not like about QuickBooks. QuickBooks reconciliation feature allows you to, let's say you can't balance out, you just cannot figure where the problem is. They have a little button for you to click to say, oh, you can't figure it out? Here, push this little button and you'll be in balance. We'll fix it for you. Do not do that. I have had clients that have used that feature repetitively. Wow. And oh boy, it just plugs it somewhere in there. It just plugs it. Yeah. And so we've had plugged entries that totaled $20,000, $30,000, $40,000 worth of just plugs because they couldn't reconcile. So do it right. Let's see. Reconcile your credit card accounts. IRS compliance issue. Pay fair and reasonable compensation. If you're the receptionist, don't expect to be paid $50,000, $60,000 a year. That's just not reasonable, especially if you're part-time, okay? Pay employees through the payroll system. And I did warn the pastors, don't tip the volunteers.
Yep.
They're volunteers. They're volunteering. That means I'm going to volunteer and not get paid. I'm here to serve. Okay?
Is there something by state that you could tell? Because I know, like, maybe I put no
problem. One question here. Come on, real quick.
Is there a guideline for salaries based on your state? Because, like, I'm from North Carolina. Mm-hmm. I know the cost of living in Chicago would be different. So is there anywhere you could get, like, a fair reasonable?
Oh, you can go on salary.com. Salary.com and find out what different jobs are paid. Okay. Now, more than likely, it's going to be a while before you can hit that level where you're paying people what they're really worth. Okay. key thing is at least give them minimum wage, okay? And the other thing is, I mean, minimum wage keep going up. That minimum wage is a nice pay these days, okay? I think I made minimum wage. I was making $2.65. I'm dating myself now. But yeah, I was like a teenager, $2.65, then $3.15. I was like, ooh, yeah, we making some money. Some of y'all know. Yeah, okay, it ain't just me. All right, pay your employees through payroll. You're going to file quarterly 941s. Now, 944s, that's a new cool thing. The IRS has been doing that for a couple of years now. That's an annual payroll report as opposed to a quarterly one. The 941 is a quarterly. 944 is an annual. You can't just choose and say, ooh, I'm just going to do the annual one. The IRS usually has to send you a letter that says you're a 944 filer, okay? And they don't have an application process for you to file. Do your year-end payrolls. Contribution statements, this is very important. I'm going to move quickly past this slide, you've got your notes. Let's see, training. If you're inexperienced, seek professional assistance. I don't even have to tell you who to call, okay? You need software, tutorial, you need training, whether it's learning how to use your software, online training, you just have to look for training, and also the one-on-one with a professional. Any questions and answers? I think we've done all the questions and answers. And two questions, that's it, because we get Clara's time. Yes.
What skill set should you look for when you're hiring someone for this position?
It depends on how much you can afford to pay. If you can afford to pay a bookkeeper, usually somebody with a couple of years of experience. But I'll tell you, I mean, I work with churches that have only 10 members. You know, they're just getting started and working their way up. And usually it's the first lady. Usually it's the first lady that's handling the books, or a volunteer, and just somebody that just can, you know, they know how to click the mouse. You know how to get around the computer. They know something about handling money. And, you know, we basically train them, you know, and they do a pretty good job, okay, when you've got professional support. But when you don't, you know, and you're out there on your own, and it's one thing when you've got professional support. If you don't have professional support, then now you're relying on this person not only to do the bookkeeping, but to stay on top of compliance issues. And that may be a stretch. For them, okay? So it really depends on the size of your organization and what you can afford to pay. But don't hire a CPA to do data entry. It's too much money, okay? You don't pay somebody $150 an hour to do data entry. Try to get your volunteers, your cheap labor, free labor, I should say, to do that kind of stuff. Was there one more question back there? Yes.
Is there a payroll accounting system that you would recommend for small ministries?
Usually in Peachtree or QuickBooks does the payroll for you. Mm-hmm. They do the payroll for you. Or you can pay a professional service to do your payroll. I usually do not recommend you pay a service like ADP or Paychex to do your payroll unless you are versed with compliance issues. You would think that they would keep you in compliance, yeah. But when it comes to setting up ministers and getting you set up right for the ministers' taxes and stuff, they don't always address that properly. Some of them don't even know what you're talking about, okay? So I wouldn't do that. Okay, we are done. Claire.
Can you recommend Worth's manual to ministers? Where there are parsonage allowances for ministers, do you recommend that book for ministers?
What's that book?
Worth's.
No, I'm not familiar with it, so I can't say that.
There are so many deductions for ministers, mm-hmm. and all of this is spelled out in that book.
Okay.
But it also involves how the minister is paid. Not one check, but two. Mm-hmm. One that they do pay taxes on, and the parsonage allowance that has you don't pay taxes on
right.
at all.
Yeah.
Do you recommend that?
Oh, absolutely, that you do that. That's another our discussion about ministers' compensation. Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. And when you're filling out your surveys and stuff, that might be a topic that you could mention, you know, discussing ministers' compensation. We did have, maybe about 3 years ago, they did want me to come in and talk about, you know, setting up a ministers' compensation package. So, you know, that is something that you might want to mention, that they add that to the course listing as well.